door. "Marie, finish up there. We're going back to the hospital. Gary Pritchard has just rung and Tony's more or less ready to speak to us. I've told him to stay with her and not to let her talk to anyone else, not even her parents, until we get there." Marie pulled on her jacket and felt around in her pockets for the car keys. If Tony could say something specific about Emily, it would save them a whole load of shoe leather. They arrived at the hospital in 7 minutes, and in another 2 they were standing looking down at Tony Clarkson's bruised and tear-stained face.
"Tony, this is D.I. Jackman and his Sergeant Marie Evans. Like I said, they are here to help you."
Gary sounded warm and reassuring, like a favorite uncle. He'd clearly used this time before their arrival to try to gain the girl's confidence. Marie looked at Tony and saw a touch of belligerence in her eyes. Jackman drew up a chair close to the bed and placed himself on a level with the girl so as not to intimidate her. He assured her that she was not in any trouble, and all they wanted to do was find whoever had hurt her and punish them. The belligerence in Tony's eyes slowly disappeared, and only fear remained.
"I don't know anything," she whimpered.
"Well, let's start when you left your friends at the war memorial, shall we?" asked Jackman softly. Tony's eyes darted around the room. She swallowed several times but said nothing. "You told your friends you were going somewhere where you'd be welcome." Tony drew in on herself, and despite the almost unbearable heat of the room, she began to shiver. "Did you go to that place, Tony?" Jackman asked. Marie knew that if she did exist, with every second, things were looking blacker for Emily.
"And were you welcome?" she asked softly. "Were you given alcohol?"
Tony gave a long, shaky sigh and nodded miserably.
"There's always free booze if you want it."
"And where is the place?"
"As if I'm going to tell you lot."
Her defiance returned.
"They'll kill me if I grass them up, and anyway, it's not that straightforward."
She wiped a tear from her cheek and winced as she touched the bruised bone.
"But I'll tell you this. There were people there that I'd never seen before."
She drew the bedclothes tighter to her and rocked backwards and forward.
"They said they were going on to another party."
"And you went with them?" Jackman looked at the girl. She nodded again. "In a car?"
"Yes."
"What kind? Was it a 4x4? Jackman asked.
"No, just an ordinary car."
"Were you alone?"
"I thought some of the others were going, but when I got into the car, it was just me with one of the men."
"It's okay, Tony. You're safe now." Jackman's voice was gentle. "We won't let anything else happen to you. But do you know where you went? Did you recognize the place where the party was held?"
"There was no party."
Her voice was heavy, flat.
"And I don't know where I was taken. We drove for ages, way out onto the fen somewhere. The place stank of rotting cabbage, made me want to throw up."
"Was it a farm?" asked Marie. "Or some sort of farm building, maybe?" The girl shook her head.
"I don't know, I don't think so. It was old and really creepy."
She frowned.
"But I could hear music, so I wasn't scared. We went down into a sort of cellar. It had oil lamps and candles, and the seats were old boxes with blankets thrown over them. There were wine bottles everywhere. I thought it were pretty cool to start with."
"But not later," Marie thought angrily, seeing the welts on her face and watching as she clasped her midriff to protect her cracked ribs. "How many people were there with you, Tony?" Jackman asked.
"To start with, just me and the bloke who drove me there. He said we were early and the others would be along soon. He gave me a glass of red wine."
"And you drank it?"
"Free wine?"
Tony rolled her eyes at Jackman as if he'd just said something quite insane.
Yeah.
Can you describe the man, Tony?
Kind of old. A bit like you, I guess. But he had a great haircut and trendy clothes.
Tall, short. Jackman was smiling slightly at being described as old. Tony looked at him.
Your height, but he had a hotter body, more muscles.
Marie was trying hard not to grin.
What about his clothes?
Faded jeans, but expensive. Blue t-shirt and trainers and a grey zip-up jacket with a hood. Yeah, he were trendy for an old guy.
Listen, Tony, Jackman said. Would you recognise him again? She shrugged, then gasped and put a hand to her broken rib.
Maybe. He was kind of ordinary looking and a bit shy, although he smiled a lot. Oh, and he smelled good,
she added. Jackman threw a puzzled look in Marie's direction. Whatever this man had done to her, thought Marie, talking about him didn't seem to upset Tony. And he didn't come over as some sinister psycho either.
Was he the one who hurt you?
Tony shook her head.
Oh, no, not him. When the others arrived, he left. I didn't see him again.
The others?
Tony tensed and swallowed hard. She paused, her young brow wrinkled in confusion.
Things got weird. I can't remember any more.
Marie's heart sank. The damn drug must have been in the wine. Just as they were getting to the crux of the matter, Tony was slipping off the radar.
Can you recall how many people were there?
I don't know, not many.
Jackman was regarding the girl thoughtfully. Then he gave Marie a look that said they'd pussyfooted around for long enough. His expression changed. Tony, when you were brought in, you spoke about someone called Emily. Do you remember her? Was she there with you? A look of terror stamped itself on Tony's face. Tony, who is Emily? And exactly what happened to her? A gurgle escaped from the teenager's throat, and then a loud, low moan. Marie hoped it wouldn't bring the medical staff running. Jackman leant closer to the bed. Listen, Tony. She may be in grave danger. You have to tell us anything you can remember, please. Tears began to flood down over the livid bruises.
I told you, it all got weird. It's like a bad dream. Everything's all jumbled up together.
Tony sobbed.
Someone was singing and then someone was shaking me and asking me stupid questions.
What questions?
Like, when was I born?
The age of consent. Marie gritted her teeth. The bastard was checking whether she was underage.
You mean the year you were born?
No, the whole thing, the day, the month, and the year.
Wordlessly, Gary held out a tissue to her, and Tony took it and wiped her nose.
He did the same to Emily.
The tears welled up again.
Then I was out in the fields. I was so scared, I felt sick. Emily had gone and I was lost. I wanted my mum and dad. I wanted to go home.
Who is Emily, Tony? You have to tell us. Jackman was almost shouting. Marie gave a sharp cough that meant, don't blow it now.
I think my patient has had enough for now, Inspector.
The young doctor was standing in the doorway, and he was no longer smiling. Jackman nodded brusquely, smiled tightly at Tony, and they reluctantly left the room.
I'll hang on here, sir, said Gary, until you can organise some uniforms to come and take over from me.
He gave them a conspiratorial wink.
But there's no rush. I'll do my best to get another word with her when she's calmed down.
Jackman drove back to the station, giving Marie time to read through her notes. Two things bothered her.
What was all that about exactly when she was born? I mean, if they were checking her age with sex in mind, she's 16, so...
She shrugged.
So why ditch her and take the other lass? Jackman shook his head.
Maybe they wanted underage girls. And Emily may be younger than Tony, or perhaps Tony was hallucinating by that time. But then again, if someone was looking for a particular girl, then he'd need an exact birth date. He pulled a face. Nothing really makes much sense, does it?
And another thing. What the hell did she mean by saying that the club she went to wasn't that straightforward?
Well, I think I can answer that.
Jackman muttered a curse and accelerated past the slow-moving vehicle.
The Harlan Marsh officers have been chasing a venue that constantly changes location.
Marie sat and listened with growing distaste as Jackman told her about the drinking club. Sounds like a pretty nasty setup, sir.
It does. And because the venue moves about, it has been difficult to nail them. Every time they get close, it moves off again.
I see. So that's what Tony meant. Maybe she'll feel like telling us a bit more when the seriousness of what happened finally hits home. It might even be something of a turning point for her.
Jackman raised an eyebrow. Let's hope so. I think it scared her senseless.
Oh, well, let's hope Gary gets a lucky break with the kid. He's a good man, isn't he?
Jackman nodded. He's not that old, but he reminds me of the old-style proper coppers.
Exactly, said Marie. Give me that any day rather than the lads who go in with one finger on the CS gas canister.
And that leads me neatly to another point, Marie. If you agree, I'm going to be asking the super if we can have Gary temporarily transferred to our team. What do you think?
Marie nodded. Excellent idea, sir. His local knowledge could help.
Good. Then let's get back and I'll get that sorted.
It was dusk by the time they got back to the incident room, but Max, Charlie and Rosie were still heads down at their computers. Jackman grinned at them.
Okay, you guys, get home, get some rest, then get back early tomorrow.
Rosie looked up. I'm happy to give it another hour, sir.
Marie smiled at her. How come a mature woman, sharp as a butcher's knife, managed to look like an 18-year-old school prefect?
Jackman shook his head.
Thanks, but no, you get away. Take the opportunity to rest while you can.
Rosie gathered up her coat and bag.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
She glanced across to Max, hunched over his keyboard.
Are you coming?
Max leaned back, stretched his arms above his head and groaned.
I guess this search is going nowhere anyway.
He stood up.
Hang on for me, Flower, and I'll walk down to the car park with you.
Jackman watched them go, then went off to see if the office manager had left him any messages before he too went home. Marie was left to think over what had happened in the last few hours. She was certain of one thing at least. There was an Emily. But where was she? Jackman was just hanging up the phone when Marie walked into his office.
That was Gary. Tony has calmed down considerably, and when her parents went for a coffee, they had a bit of a natter, as he put it.
Marie smiled, glad that they'd chanced upon PC Pritchard.
And?
First, she confirmed that Shauna Kelly was at one of the parties. They weren't friends, but Tony knew her by sight. And Emily does exist. They'd never met before that night, and because of the drink and the drugs, her description of the girl was vague. Long, dark hair and beautiful eyes was the best Tony could come up with. Apparently, the man who was molesting them got very excited when Emily told him her date of birth, and soon after that she was dragged away. Then Tony only has vague memories of being manhandled into a car and dumped miles from anywhere.
Well, at least we know we're not chasing shadows.
That we do. The uniforms are there with Tony now. Gary's going to hitch a lift back to Harlan Marsh with a mate of his who's a porter in A&E. He said he'll stay with Tony until his friend's shift finishes.
Jackman leaned back in his chair and Marie saw how weariness had darkened his eyes.
The main thing is that now we know Emily is real.
And it looks like she's been abducted.
A shiver rippled across Marie's shoulder blades.
when you'd seen what supposedly civilized people were capable of, it was almost impossible to stop your imagination settling on the very worst scenarios. Jackman abruptly stood up. I know it goes against the grain to walk out when there's a girl missing, but we have uniform both on the streets and checking out any old and creepy properties, as Tony put it. Let's go and get some rest. Marie nodded. He was right. It went against the grain, but they were going to need to keep their wits about them. And you couldn't do that on no sleep. Asher Layton pushed back his office chair and stretched. He had intended to work on for another hour or so, but he was having trouble concentrating. He kept seeing the face of that kid on Brewer Street. She was dead, and it was bothering him deeply. He picked up his Parker Duo fold pen from the polished desk, tucked it into his jacket pocket and stood up. He should go home. It would be nice to surprise Linda. Maybe he'd take her to supper at Lorenzo's. She'd like that. She liked the finer things in life. And he knew that's why she had got engaged to him, and why she had agreed to live with him before they were married. When he was with Linda, he was the perfect gentleman. He acted honorably, and with old-world decorum. Just what she expected and wanted. Asher closed his eyes and groaned. It was killing him. He had needs, and right now they were threatening to overpower him. He adored Linda, worshipped her. He wanted her. But he knew that the only way he could keep her was to respect her puritanical Victorian-era wishes, no matter how painful they were to him. She might appear to be a chic modern young woman, but her deeply religious parents had instilled in her an inflexible, old-fashioned morality. With another deeper groan, he drew his wallet from his desk drawer and checked its contents. Plenty for what he needed. With a satisfied little grunt, he pushed the wallet into his pocket and made for the door. He'd take Linda to supper, buy her champagne, and escort her home, just like the perfect gentleman. But before he even laid eyes on her flawless porcelain skin and shimmering soft hair, he would have to keep another very different appointment. Chapter 9. Before they left the station to visit Tony's ex, Ethan Barley, Jackman and Marie took some time to make a list of derelict or abandoned places for uniform to check out for them.
There's the old pumping station at Quinton Erdike. What about that big old place on the Roman Bank?
Jackman stared at the growing list.
Windrush? The old sanatorium?
Marie grinned.
I know that old dump quite well. I spent a week there when I was a probationer. The owners rented it out for us for a training course, search and rescue and fire and safety stuff. It had been an army billet in the Second World War, and then it was a TB sanatorium. Really creepy, but interesting. The course was dead boring, so I spent quite a bit of time tracing its checkered history.
Sounds like you could have done some guided tours in the summer months.
Probably should have.
Marie looked at the clock.
Time to go. We have a vicar and his offspring to meet.
The name Fendyke Vicarage conjured up an image of chocolate box prettiness. In fact, it was a 1940s four-bedroom house, built in the grounds of the church to accommodate the vicar and his family. Its successive occupants had made no effort to make it more homely, and if the house was unexpected, then the vicar himself was even more of a surprise. The man that answered the door was around 6 foot tall, and as broad as he was high. His full beard conjured up salty sea dog, rather than vicar. Jackman wondered about his sermons.
"Come in, come in!"
He stood back and they squeezed in between his bulk and the doorframe. He led the way down a long hallway and into a large, airy lounge. Busy floral-patterned curtains did battle with a colourful carpet. On a modern leather sofa which looked incongruous amid the flower prints, lounged a black Labrador, a white cat, and a spotty youth. All three looked up as they entered, Jackman had difficulty deciding whose expression was the most disdainful.
"Nicholas, call your brother down, please."
The vicar turned to the detectives.
"I thought I'd better have both my sons available for you to talk to."
He raised a bushy eyebrow.
"Whatever the reason for your visit, it's bound to concern at least one or possibly both of them."
The teenager slouched off and shouted, "Ethan!" from the bottom of the stairs. Jackman smiled at the vicar.
"They aren't in trouble, sir. We just need some help with our inquiries regarding a missing teenager."
Reverend Barley indicated two armchairs and heaved the reluctant dog from the couch. As he lowered himself down, the sofa springs gave out a squeal of protest.
"Ah, this is Ethan, my eldest boy, and Nicholas, the baby of the family."
The baby flopped back down at the far end of the couch and glowered at them from beneath a lank fringe. Ethan dutifully stuck out a hand, then dragged a giant leather beanbag towards the fireplace and casually draped himself over it. He was thin and narrow-faced with dark hair. He wore black-rimmed designer glasses and jeans slung so low that they appeared to be defying gravity. Marie gave them an abridged version of Tony's ordeal and asked if either of them knew a girl called Shauna Kelly, or a girl called Emily with long dark hair. Jackman watched them keenly. Nicholas's face remained blank, but at the mention of Tony's name, Ethan took in a sharp breath.
"Is Tony going to be okay?"
asked the boy.
"We hope so. She was very lucky to have escaped with only relatively minor injuries," said Jackman.
The vicar spoke in a low growl.
"Best day's work you ever did, boy, breaking up with that girl. She's trouble. I always said so, didn't I?"
"It's hardly her fault if some bastard spiked her drink."
"Language, Ethan."
"Do you have a better word for someone who does that kind of thing?"
Jackman couldn't think of any, but decided not to join in the family argument.
"And Shauna or Emily?"
asked Marie.
"Nah,"
mumbled the younger boy. They looked at Ethan.
"Not Shauna, but a week or so ago a student friend of mine tried chatting up a girl called Emily in a pub in Harland Marsh."
He shrugged.
"Might not be the same Emily, of course."
"Do you know what she looked like?"
Ethan shook his head.
"I never saw her, but my friend said she was a stunner. He was gutted when she told him to get lost."
Marie took down the boy's name and number.
"We'll see if he recalls anything that might help us. Now, can you tell me if you've ever heard about an illegal underage drinking club? One that regularly changes its venue?"
The vicar leaned forward.
"Well, there. My lads wouldn't go near that sort of place."
"I'm sure they wouldn't," Marie said. "But they might have heard rumours about it, mightn't they?"
The vicar sat back again.
"I suppose so. Boys?"
Ethan shook his head.
"I've never heard of it. But I'd guess Tony Clarkson could help you. She was always on about some place where you could get legless for free. Not my kind of scene."
He bit his lip.
"And if you must know, that was one reason why we broke up."
"Good thing she dumped you, cheap tart," muttered Nicholas.
But Jackman had seen his expression. Nicholas knew more about the drinking club than he was letting on.
"And you, Nicholas? Anything filtered your way?"
"Nah."
He shifted slightly in his seat.
"Don't know what you're on about."
Jackman did not believe him, and he knew Marie didn't either, but neither of them commented. It would be better to get the boy on his own.
"And finally, Reverend Barley, would you know who holds a key for the old chapel out on the Fen Road?"
Jackman glanced quickly at the two boys. Ethan maintained an indifferent expression, but Nicholas gave a small start that he hastened to cover up.
"Well, I do, actually. Why do you ask?"
The vicar looked bemused.
"We're checking all deserted and unsafe buildings," said Jackman, "because of the missing girl. Could we please trouble you to either unlock it for us or let us have the key temporarily?"
"Of course. I'll get it for you now."
He eased himself up, and the sofa squeaked again. Probably with relief. He came back and handed Jackman a metal keyring with a tattered card label attached to it.
I wouldn't like to say how long it is since the door was opened, dear Jackman. I think it must have been last autumn when we had all those high winds. The bell tower collapsed and we checked inside for other damage. Since then, it's remained shut up.
Jackman wasn't so sure about that. He nodded and took the keys. The vicar glanced at the mantel clock.
I'd come with you, but I have an appointment with one of my parishioners in 15 minutes.
No problem, sir. We'll bring them back straight away.
Marie looked around and smiled.
Maybe one of your lads would like to come down there with us.
No way.
Nicholas rose from his couch with unprecedented speed and headed for the door.
Stuff to do.
Ethan placed a hand behind one ear.
Oh, yeah? I can hear the plaintive cry of an abandoned PlayStation.
Get stuffed.
I'll go with you.
Ethan didn't sound exactly enthusiastic, but he had volunteered.
Good boy, said the vicar. Do you have children, dear Jackman?
No, although my brother has boys, and when I can, I spend time with them.
The vicar shook his head.
Well, they are a blessing and a curse. I somehow suspect that Nicholas will not be following in his brother and sister's footsteps to university.
I doubt he'll even make it to the job centre, added Ethan grimly.
The Reverend sighed.
We mustn't give up on him, son. Maybe he'll surprise us all one day.
By the look of his younger son, the only surprise Reverend Barley was likely to get would be an unpleasant one. As Jackman drove back towards the chapel, he glanced in the rearview mirror at Ethan. He was not the kind of boy he had expected, considering Neil and Ellen Clarkson's rather scathing opinion of him. Above all, even disregarding their age difference, Jackman could not picture him with the belligerent lippy young Tony.
"So, what are you studying?"
Jackman asked, smiling into the mirror.
"Politics and international relations. I'm doing a degree at Nottingham."
"You going to specialise?"
"I'm planning on doing globalisation in my third year."
"Interesting. Did I hear your father mention that your sister is also at uni?"
Ethan's narrow face broke into a smile.
"Oh, yes. Daybreak is the brains of the family."
"Daybreak?" Marie queried.
"Her name's Dawn, but she hates it. She calls herself Danny. Daybreak's my version of her real name. She's at Oxford studying theology. Dad is over the moon. If it weren't for Nick, he'd really believe he'd been thrice blessed."
"You do know that your brother knows about this drinking club," said Marie casually.
"What? Nick? You're kidding," Ethan laughed. "Nick would need sat-nav to find his own belly button. He's as thick as two short planks. He'd never be clever enough to keep quiet about something like that."
"I wouldn't be so sure," said Marie.
"He reacted when we mentioned it. He almost slid down the back of the couch." "I can't believe that."
Jackman gave a shrug.
"We'll see, shall we? Forgive me for saying this, but what on earth did you see in Tony Clarkson? You two seem poles apart."
Ethan took a deep breath.
"Don't be deceived by Tony, Inspector. She's far cleverer than she lets on." "What did I see in her? Well, I loved the way she kept true to herself, despite her family's wealth. I loved the way she kicked against the system. I saw a free spirit, and I think I may know her better than she knows herself."
Jackman turned into the lane leading to the chapel.
"She'll calm down as she grows up."
Ethan spoke more like her mentor than a former boyfriend.
"You might not believe it, but Tony can be really sweet when you get her away from her friends."
Jackman pulled up and switched off the engine. In the sudden quiet, Ethan said,
"She had a close call, didn't she?"
"Yes, Ethan, she did."
Jackman's expression was grave.
"About as close as it gets. We believe she narrowly escaped being abducted."
"Is she allowed visitors?"
"She may be going home this afternoon, so ring first, but yes, I think it would do her good to see a friendly face."
They got out of the car and walked up to the entrance. Jackman had decided to check the main chapel before they went into the cellar. Ethan brushed plaster dust from his skinny jeans.
"What a dump. Have you been in here before?"
Marie asked.
I was at home when the storm hit. I came down with my father and a few of the parishioners to check for damage.
Did Nicholas go with you? The boy frowned.
Come to think of it, he did, which was pretty weird. He doesn't usually help with anything.
They scoured the old building for some 10 minutes, finding nothing but dusty broken masonry and pigeon droppings. Okay, let's check the cellar, shall we?
There's a cellar? Asked Ethan.
On these silty fens? I never knew that. Murray nodded.
Well, I suppose it's a crypt, really. There's a door around the back.
They watched his face, but saw only mild surprise. It intensified when he watched them lift aside matted nettles and brambles to expose the steps down to the door.
Bloody hell!
He glanced at Marie and shook his head in disbelief.
I bet my father doesn't know about this. What do you think is down there?
Let's find out, shall we?
Jackman decided that the boy actually looked genuinely stunned by the discovery. Marie tried the smallest of the three keys into the lock. The old door swung open more smoothly than it ought to have done, and they stepped inside. The crypt was a large open area. It had a stone floor, a low ceiling, and the remnants of one mega party. Ethan let out a low whistle. Marie glanced at Jackman.
I think we just found one of the venues for that drinking club.
Jackman gazed around the crypt. Bottles, cans, plastic glasses, cigarette packets and dog ends, and dozens of spent candles were strewn across the floor.
This is gross.
Ethan's navy and white Converse boot kicked at a used condom.
This was a place of worship.
Jackman noted the disgust on his face. Ethan might be a student radical, but his father's influence was clearly still there.
So was Mednam Abbey, said Jackman. And look what the Hellfire Club used that for.
It's still gross.
It is. Now, I wonder how the partygoers got hold of the key for this place.
Marie directed a shrewd glance and a raised eyebrow towards Ethan. Ethan Barley stared back, wide-eyed.
Nick? Oh, no, surely you can't think... I do, actually.
Jackman was picking his way through crushed lager cans and discarded crisp packets. He called back,
Sorry, Ethan, but I'm with Marie on this. I think your brother is more savvy than you give him credit for.
Ethan turned pale.
My father will kill him if he finds out.
I hope you mean that, figuratively.
The boy said nothing.
I'm afraid that we are going to need these keys, said Marie,
dangling the ring on her index finger.
We need to seal this place up and get a Socko down here. Forensics?
Ethan's eyes grew wider.
This may have been the place that Tony and Emily were brought to, Marie said gently.
He stared at the floor.
If you find evidence that my brother has something to do with this, he'll be in serious trouble, won't he? Up to his sticky-out ears, I'm afraid.
Marie pushed her hands deep into her pockets.
Unless, of course, you could get him to talk to us. We'd be a lot more lenient with him then.
And Ethan, we need to know if there has been another key cult, Jackman added. You think you could find out for us? Meanwhile, we'll say nothing about suspecting that Nicholas may be involved.
I need some air.
Ethan walked slowly back through the door and up the steps, shoulders hunched. He went over to a low wall that edged the churchyard and sat down heavily. Jackman went over and sat down beside him.
We could be wrong, but we have to find out what's going on. You realize that, don't you, Ethan?
Ethan nodded.
I'll help, for my family's sake, and for Tony and the other girl.
He looked at Jackman.
Is this Emily in serious danger?
What do you think, Ethan? According to Tony, she was drugged and dragged away. God knows where. She hasn't been seen since. It doesn't get much more dangerous than that.
The boy bit his lip and stared at the ground.
I'll do all I can with Nicholas.
Marie walked over to them.
I'll call this in, sir, and get uniform down here. Then we'll get Ethan home.
Back at the vicarage, Jackman gave the boy his card.
Anytime, day or night, okay?
Ethan nodded and pocketed it.
I hope you find her.
Jackman glanced at Marie as they pulled away.
He's not a bad kid, but his brother gives me the creeps.
No mention of a mother. I'm guessing she's dead, Marie said flatly.
I saw some photographs in the lounge, all rather old, no new ones.
I rather thought the same.
Maybe that's why Nicholas is so...
Marie shrugged.
Hard to find a word to describe him, isn't it?
I can think of a few, but none are repeatable.
Jackman grinned at her, and then the smile faded.
This whole thing is getting complicated, Marie. And I keep thinking about the fact that we are supposed to be finding time to reopen the Kenya Black case. He sighed. We need to get to the bottom of these clubs fast. And if we can close them down and collar the men behind them, we stand a good chance of halting the abductions.
And finding our missing girl,
Marie nodded, almost to herself.
Well, at least now we have a starting point. The chapel was definitely a venue. We will certainly find forensic evidence there, so...
She smiled at him.
It's a positive thing, sir. We are moving forward at last.
Jackman was glad of Marie's confident approach, but hoped that they would not encounter yet another obstacle. Or worse still, another missing girl. Chapter 10 Max stretched and pushed back his chair.
Hot chocolate?
He called across to where Rosie sat at her computer. She looked up and smiled.
I'd kill for one, as they say.
Max walked out to the vending machine and glanced back at her. Rosie was still staring at the monitor, idly twisting her hair into a tight corkscrew. He smiled. He'd often noticed her doing that when she concentrated. As he sorted out some change, he wondered why he'd always taken Rosie for granted. They were on different teams, but had worked in the same office for years, so why hadn't he found out more about her? He knew she was one of three girls, all in the police force, and all in different divisions, and that she had a flat over a flower shop in the high street. End of. She was supposed to be his colleague, maybe even his friend. Should he ask her to go out for a drink with him? Max pushed the coins hard into the machine. They had a missing girl to find, and he needed to keep his mind firmly on that. This was no time for idle daydreams. PC's Andy English and Kevin Stoner sat in their squad car and appraised the scene before them. Windrush was a massive old Gothic Victorian property, sitting in overgrown parkland that rose up on a hill that bordered the marsh. It must have been quite something in its heyday, but those times were definitely over.
Oh my, murmured Andy. We'll need a fortnight to check this dump thoroughly.
Kevin didn't answer. He was still trying to take in the scale of the old mansion. The main house was more or less intact, but someone was apparently demolishing some of the outbuildings. Piles of rubble and stacks of old timber were heaped along the edge of the lawn, and Kevin could see a plume of grey smoke rising from around the back.
Well, someone is here.
He pointed to the smoke. Let's go and have a word. Andy nodded. The two policemen stepped out onto the weed-covered gravel drive and slammed the car doors. They made their way towards a flight of stone steps that led up to the main entrance. A JCB stood at the foot of the steps. They both heard a soft ticking sound as they passed it. Andy nodded at it.
Engine's cooling down. You're right about someone being around.
What are they doing with this place?
Murmured Kevin.
No idea. Haven't been out this way for years.
Kevin pushed open one of the two big front doors, and they stepped into a huge foyer.
Finland Constabulary,
he called out. Anyone home?
His voice echoed across the cracked marble floor, up the empty staircase.
Must be outside.
Together they walked around to the side of the house. On what was left of an expanse of concrete patio was a battered metal skip, with a thick plank of wood resting against the lower edge. As they approached it, they saw a mountain of a man, his fat hands gripping the rubber handles of a loaded builder's wheelbarrow, stride effortlessly up the plank. With a roar, he heaved upward and sent the weighty contents crashing down into the dented old container. With a deft twist, he turned the cement-caked barrow and marched down. Sweat dripped from a brow that creased into a scowl of disapproval when his eyes fell on the two policemen. Kevin fought to retain his normal calm expression as he gazed at the ugliest man he'd ever seen.
Good afternoon, sir. Are you the owner here?
Every inch of the man's huge frame flashed a warning signal.
No, the frown deepened and he added, there's nothing here for you. This is private property.
Sorry, sir, but we have a young woman missing.
Kevin tried to look taller and tougher than he actually was, but gave up quickly.
We are checking all the unoccupied buildings in the area, and we'd like the owner's permission to have a look around.
Something darted across the giant's face. Andy found his expression hard to read, but the mention of the girl had clearly affected him in some way.
Oh, well, that's different.
He didn't smile at them, but his anger seemed to abate somewhat.
A girl, you say? Well, I've been out here from dawn to dusk for the past month and I've seen no one.
It's a big place, sir. She could have sneaked in or been brought here, and you'd not necessarily have noticed.
We do need to have a look, I'm afraid. Yes, of course, I don't suppose the owner, Mr. Broom, would object.
He brushed dirt from his meaty hands and wiped them down his trouser leg.
But I'll have to come with you. This place is not safe, and some of it's locked. I need to get the keys. Oh, and you'll need RDATs too, health and safety and all that crap.
Thank you, sir, said Andy politely.
And you are?
The man took his time.
Micah. I'm Micah Lee, Mr. Broom's caretaker. He don't come here too often, so I keeps an eye on things for him.
And you are doing a lot of work too, added Kevin, looking at the site that Micah was in the process of clearing.
What are the plans for this place?
It's a big project.
A dream, really. But you'd better ask Mr. Broom about that. I'll give you his card when we go into my office.
He sniffed loudly.
Now, come with me, and we'll get those hats.
An hour later, their shoes scuffed and their uniforms dirty, the two policemen decided that enough was enough.
No one has been here, have they?
Grumbled Kevin.
They'd be barking if they did, added Andy, rubbing plaster dust from his trouser leg. This place is a death trap.
Kevin looked at Micah.
Sorry to have disturbed you, Mr. Lee. Good luck with the project, he grimaced. Because I reckon you're going to need it.
Oh, it'll happen. We'll see, officer. It will take time, but Mr. Broom will get his dream one day.
Kevin opened the car door and sank gratefully down into the driver's seat.
I hope so, sir.
He turned on the ignition, waved, and then drove down the wide driveway as swiftly as he could.
Bloody hell. That was one ugly son of a bitch, wasn't it?
Hagrid meets the Incredible Hulk,
Andy swallowed.
I'm going to have nightmares thinking about that face. Did you see the calluses on his hands?
I did, and I certainly wouldn't want to meet him in an alley on a dark night.
Andy stared down at the tatty dog-eared card that he held in his hand.
Shall I give this broom bloke a bell?
Kevin slowed down at the gatehouse, then pulled out into the deserted lane.
Not much point. I get the feeling that the big guy will probably have already contacted him about our visit.
As he accelerated away from the desolate old property, he frowned. But I will make sure the boss knows about this place. I can't say that I'm really happy about it, are you? Andy let out a whistle.
You want me to be honest? I've never felt so spooked by a place since I was a Cub Scout and someone shut me in the churchyard at dusk. He rubbed his hands together. Shit scared, my friend. That's how I felt. Shit scared. Back at the station, Jackman went to check for any messages from forensics. Clive, his office manager, flashed a cheery grin and began to root around in the masses of untidy paperwork on his desk. He located the correct memo sheet in seconds, something that always amazed Jackman.
One of the Sokols rang us from the scene, boss. She reckoned there were enough bodily fluids floating around in there to crush the computer's DNA file, but unfortunately the tests take time. It will be over a week before we get the results.
Sod it. How about prints?
A shedload. She'll stick them on the database as soon as she gets back to the lab. If there's any matches, they'll come up straight away.
That sounds a bit more promising. Keep me posted, will you? Jackman went back to his office where Marie joined him. Marie, I suppose you don't know if you've ever bumped into young Nicholas Barley before, in an official capacity.
He's had his collar felt a few times, said Marie. Unfortunately, it was nothing bad enough to warrant taking his dabs.
No matter. We'll take them anyway.
I'll get that sorted, said Marie. By the way, can I run something past you, sir?
Fire away.
Do you think Tony Clarkson would be up to going to the old chapel to see if she can remember if that was where the so-called party was held?
Jackman nodded. I think she's got the nerve, don't you?
Yes, I do. Shall I go over to the hospital and ask her?
Jackman shook his head. No offence, but why not ring Harlan Marsh Nick and get Gary Pritchard to do it? He seems to have a way with that kid.
Good point. I'll contact him. And I'll ring that friend of Ethan's, too.
Jackman walked back out to the CID room and saw Rosie, Max and Charlie all gloomily staring at computer printouts.
I guess from your faces, we've nothing more on Emily.
Rosie looked up.
Sorry, boss. We are running out of options to explore. I'm beginning to wonder if that drug messed with Tony's head. We could be onto a hallucination.
Max pulled a face.
We can't rule that out, but the kid is remembering more every time we speak to her. I'm sure Emily exists. Sorry, guys, just keep looking.
Marie joined them.
Ethan's friend isn't answering his mobile, so I've left a message on voicemail. Let's hope he gets back to us.
And Gary?
He's on his way to the hospital now, and he was certain that he could get her to visit the chapel.
Excellent. We'll meet him there. And then go back to the chapel with Tony. If she recognizes that cellar, it will tell her something definite, and we'll ask her if she can remember any more about Emily.
Jackman straightened up. Right, time to move. Rosie, you check our own records and see if we have anything logged here in Sultan-le-Fen about illicit parties or drinking clubs. Keep me updated on anything you unearth, and Max, you and Charlie keep digging regarding Mispers, and listen out for this call from Ethan Barley's friend. Get as much as you can from him about the Emily he chatted up in the pub, okay?
Max nodded.
Okay. And go to it.
We have to find out what happened to Tony Clarkson, and particularly whether we have another missing girl. We need something to corroborate Tony's story about the beautiful Emily with the long dark hair.
Jackman tossed Marie his keys.
You drive, my phone's ringing.
He pulled his mobile from his pocket and walked around to the passenger door.
Dear Jackman, I'm sorry, but I need to understand something.
It took him a moment to realize it was Ethan Barley.
Sure, Ethan, fire away.
Can you assure me that it really would help my brother if he spoke to you? I mean, it's not some kind of trick on your part, is it? I know a bit about entrapment and shit like that. It does happen, so don't tell me otherwise.
I wouldn't lie to you, Ethan. That sort of thing does go on, but not with my team, okay? If Nicholas knows something, and he comes to us freely, it will go well for him. Likewise, if he knows something and hides it from me, I'll hit him harder than a speeding lorry. Is that clear?
The line went quiet for a long time. Finally, Ethan said,
"Then I think he needs to talk to you."
If he needs a bit of persuasion, Ethan, you can tell him we have lifted an awful lot of fingerprints from that cellar.
if his are there, or on a bottle maybe, and he denies knowing about the party, I guess your father won't be too pleased to see his younger son in handcuffs.
I'll bring him down.
Ethan sounded scared. In 2 hours, okay? I'll meet you at the front desk.
Yeah. Oh, and forget the girl my friend chatted up. I've just heard from him and she was a blonde with spiky hair.
The line went dead. Well, thanks to a little arm-twisting from Big Brother, young Nicholas is about to pay us a visit. Marie smiled.
Perfect. Could save us a lot of legwork.
And if Tony recognizes the crypt, then everything could fall into place pretty quickly. But Jackman sounded more confident than he felt. Marie managed to persuade the Clarksons to wait in their car, while she and Jackman showed Tony the chapel. She would probably be much more willing to talk if her parents weren't hovering in the background. Tony held onto Marie's arm as she led her along the gravel path, and Marie felt her growing more and more tense with every step. She patted the girl's hand.
You've nothing to fear, Tony. Just tell us whether or not you recognize the cellar, and then we'll get you out of there straight away.
I hate not being able to remember everything. It's so scary. I mean, those freaky perverts could have done anything.
Tony winced and touched her side with her free hand. But they didn't, Tony. Hold on to that.
Marie stopped, took the girl by the shoulders and looked into her eyes.
It's bad enough that they hurt you, but they never sexually assaulted you, okay?
Tony nodded and mumbled.
Yeah, I suppose.
They walked to the top of the steps and looked down.
Okay, let's get this over with.
Tony stepped down, touching the wall tentatively with her fingertips, as if she were reading Braille. Gary was waiting at the bottom, and he held out his hand to her.
Good lass. Well done, he said. Just a quick look round, and then we'll get you on your way home, okay?
Tony stood at the entrance to the crypt and stared about her. She wrinkled her nose as the smell hit her.
No, this wasn't it. It smells even worse than cabbages. It stinks like piss.
Are you sure, Tony?
Jackman had been so certain that this was the place.
Yes, this is bigger. And well, it looks like part of an old church. That place I was in.
She gave an involuntary shiver.
It was a proper cellar. You know, like there was old stuff around. Boxes and cases and that sort of thing.
Do you see anything here that reminds you of where you were taken?
Asked Gary. The girl walked further in, then stopped and looked around her.
There were bottles with candles stuck in them, like those.
She pointed to a stone shelf lined with empty wine bottles with candle stubs in their necks. She walked towards them and picked one up.
Emily showed me this label. She thought it were funny, and we laughed at it.
Put it down, please, Tony, said Marie. We may need to check the prints on it. Are you saying you were offered the same type of wine?
Tony nodded furiously.
I wouldn't forget that name, would I?
They leaned over her shoulder and saw the label, Old Tart.
There was one called Old Git. We laughed at that too.
Jackman shrugged.
People buy the label, not the wine, I suppose.
Actually, they are deceptively good wines, sir. One's a Sauvignon Blanc and Territ. And the other's a Grenache Syrah,
Gary said.
I had no idea you were a connoisseur.
Are they hard to find? No, sir. A lot of the supermarkets stock them.
They would, wouldn't they?
Jackman muttered.
Can I go home now? This minging place is making me want to hoop up.
Marie put an arm around Tony's slender shoulder and smiled at her.
Of course. I feel exactly the same. Thank you, Tony. You've really helped us.
Have you found Emily yet?
Marie's smile faded.
Not yet. But when you've settled in at home,
We really need to talk to you some more about her.
Sure. Although I don't know what else I can tell you. It's all so fuzzy.
Marie tried to sound positive. Hey, you just remembered laughing over the wine labels. I'm sure other things will start coming back to you.
Maybe.
Tony glanced towards the doorway, where her father now stood anxiously shifting from foot to foot.
I hope so. Emily was really nice.
Gary and Tony drove away. Jackman needed to call the station, so Marie slid in behind the steering wheel, started the engine and waited while he strode around trying to find a signal. She yawned, tapped her fingers on the wheel, and then eased the car round to face the road. When she looked up again, Jackman was hurrying across the grass towards her. Rosie's found two incidents reported in the last few months where youngsters attended underground parties and finished up the worse for wear.
Right. They were local?
Local kids, but the venues were out of town. That's all she knows. She's still digging. Right now, we need to go interview the Barley boys. So put your foot down, Marie. I can't wait to hear what baby brother has to tell us. Chapter 11. Whatever Ethan said to Nicholas, it had a profound effect. The boy was spewing out information like a broken tap.
I thought it was cool to start with. Make a load of wonga for getting a shitty key copied. I mean, who wouldn't? It wasn't until later that I got scared, Nicholas said.
Shame you didn't think it through first, dickhead, murmured his brother.
What did you think they were going to do down there? Hold prayer meetings and plan world peace? I didn't care what they did. The place is a crap hole anyway.
So what was the story they gave you, Nicholas? Asked Jackman.
They had crates and crates of booze, and were happy to share it with us if we kids just hung out with them. No strings.
Jackman's gut twisted into a small, painful knot.
And what sorts of activities were involved in this hanging out?
Nicholas shrugged.
Just drinking, dancing together. Bit of a feel and a snog.
He bit his lip.
Though I think some of them went further.
We saw the condoms, thank you.
Well, I didn't know that was going to happen, did I? The old guys, well, they just looked, didn't they? I mean, they never touched us or anything like that. They just sat in the shadows and watched us.
Nicholas stared down at the table.
Some of the kids wanted to give them their money's worth, kind of shock them, show them what they could do.
He turned his acne-spattered face towards them.
It was the drink, wasn't it? Most of them were hammered by that time.
His eyes returned to the table.
I split when I saw one of the men had a camcorder in one hand and his di-
He grimaced and pointed to his crotch.
If you catch my drift.
Sorry, Nicholas, but we need to be clear on this. One of the older men was touching himself as he watched the youngsters.
Nicholas nodded.
Wanker.
You realize we have to stop this, don't you? Before one of these kids gets... God knows what could happen to them.
Yeah, but there were no names used, he sighed. I'll tell you all I know if you can keep it from Dad.
Jackman saw the consternation on Nicholas's face. The good reverend must have something of a temper, he thought. The lad was terrified.
Tell us all you know, and I'll keep most of it from your father. And I'll make sure he knows you helped us.
Just tell them, asshole. And thank your lucky stars you're getting let off so easily, hissed Ethan.
20 minutes later, they let the boys go. They had descriptions, locations, and best of all, Nicholas described the exact spot in the cellar where the main man had sat. Any DNA evidence found in that immediate area could be traced to him. Jackman closed the interview room door and exhaled loudly.
I can't wait to tie this up with what Gary Pritchard has already got.
We can't waste a moment in getting these perverts into the custody suite. Marie nodded.
Bastards. Just the thought of those slime balls watching young kids makes me want to heave.